All right, everybody, how's it going? Welcome to the 100th episode of On the Wire. Of course, we're a proud member of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. We are recording, as you can see, live from PitchCon 2023. Couldn't be more excited. Kevin joins me as always. I think we've only missed like a 5 episodes total in 2 years together. How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great, Adam. Thank you. That's it's been it's crazy. It doesn't seem like 2 years or 100 episodes just because it's so much fun, man.
To think it took us 100 episodes to finally do one of these things live streaming. And so now we can hear all the edits that I actually make in the background on the back end. And they're all going to show up fine here. So you can kind of see how the magic works and kind of the raw data, if you will, of the episode. So looking forward to that. All right. Well, we don't have a lot of time here. We typically will go a good 90 minutes. Maybe we hit 2 hours with Errol Cohen the other day. And so we know we have a hard time limit to reach here with our 1 hour panel spot here at PitchCon. And so we do find a way to talk to our guests for much longer than anyone probably would assume we would. Like I said, average about 90 minute episodes. So we're going to keep it to an hour. But today, what I wanted to do, Kevin, is I wanted to kind of reflect. It's 100 episodes, 2 years in the making. And we want to reflect on what we do here. What we give advice. We try to learn from not only ourselves, but also from our amazing guests that we've had on the show throughout the last 2 years. And of course, we're going to talk a lot about that. We are a fab-focused show. And we're going to touch on a little bit of fab throughout the episode as well. So to help us do that, reflect on everything we got going on here, kind of flip through our Rolodex, our guest Rolodex. We've had a lot of great guests. I went all the way back to guests that we had all the way back on our 4th ever episode. I want to welcome to the show kind of fantasy baseball's power couple, Justin Mason and Danielle Salinger. Guys, thank you so much for being part of our 100th episode. I couldn't think of a better pairing to kind of talk this over, and the advice that you guys give not only other people, but especially going back 2 years, talking about the advice, Danielle, that you got from the entire fantasy community as you tried to troll Justin in winning TGFBI. How you guys doing? Thanks for joining us.
I'm doing really well. It's really great to be here. Thank you guys so much for having us on.
Yeah, it's an absolute pleasure to come on and come on again with my wife. I think the last time I was on the podcast with you guys, I was on with my wife. So this is it's almost like an anniversary for us as it is for you.
There it is. That's what we're going for. Yeah. Well, I want to make sure that we get to as much of this stuff as possible. I really want to pick your guys' brain and Kevin, of course, as well, about what it is to receive advice in the fantasy baseball realm, what it is to kind of learn from scratch, Danielle, kind of where you are now compared to where you were 2 years ago when you were first jumping in. Obviously, you've been playing fantasy football for a long time, but from my understanding, TGFBI was your first foray into competitive fantasy baseball 2 years ago.
Absolutely. Yes, it was.
So let's start with you, though. What did you get taught back 2 years ago that you found absolutely useless in retrospect?
This is going to sound terrible because it is no reflection on the individual that gave me the advice. No shade meant here whatsoever, but I will say Yancey Eaton gave me a ton of great resources. Lots of resources of, you know, where I could get great information for myself during the season. But as I told Justin, I had a very difficult time with the resources because I didn't know how to utilize them yet. I didn't know enough about the game to understand the information that I was being given and how that in turn would then impact my team and my style of play. Especially because, you know, I only started learning how to play fantasy baseball 2 weeks before the start of the TGFBI draft, half of which I was sick. So I really put myself behind when I was trying to do that. But I was telling Justin, it's a lot like giving somebody a bat and then expecting them to go out and play baseball. They still need to know how to hold that bat, what a good batting stance is, what to expect when they swing the bat, what's going to happen when they hit the ball. Are they trying to get a home run, or are they just trying to get a line drive so that they can move a player? There are so many other details, and those I had to learn along the way, and I'm a little bit slow at that sort of thing. So I found that to be difficult, but I'm still in the midst of trying to learn and utilize those resources as well as Yancey does, because Yancey is amazing.
Yancey definitely has been listening and reading a lot of stuff for a long time. Mm-hmm. And so I'm sure the amount of information, or at least sources, that he was able to present to you is at least useful on the surface. But like you said, you got to know where to start and kind of how to break it down. Yeah. I mean, Justin, Yancey, you've been.
I just want to say Yancey also told me to just go ahead and reach out to people and ask for their phone numbers. That also is maybe not the best advice ever to give somebody.
So, I mean, the worst that can happen is they say no and they block you and you never hear from them ever again.
And my husband finds out and asks me why I'm asking a bunch of guys for their telephone numbers.
Pretty sure Justin probably wouldn't even ask that.
I think I'd be more upset about you asking for fantasy advice from someone else than, you know, maybe the other nefarious reasons.
Well, yeah, Justin, you've been giving fantasy advice for as long as probably anybody can remember at this point. How do you balance giving out that advice on your many platforms over the years while, you know, balancing giving advice you think people should be following and then without pretty much making yourself an open book in your drafts, that your competitive drafts that you're doing on a, you know, multiple drafts per year on an annual basis?
You know, I mean, that is, you know, really, that's a really good question, honestly. I think it, as far as I feel, and not everybody in the industry feels the way I do, my job in terms of giving out advice comes first. I am a fantasy analyst first and a fantasy player second. I hope that my fantasy analysis gives me enough research and drive to do well in fantasy leagues, but I don't hold anything back. I'm not one of those people that says, like, I'm not going to tell you this sleeper or this person I'm targeting. I mean, I do drafts live, like live stream on the air, like, you know, main event drafts and things like that, because it's my job to inform my audience, and they come, their teams come before my teams. And that is a tough lesson, because there are going to be times where I like Cedric Mullins a lot more than everybody else, and everybody else knows it. And then I'm not going to get him in my main event drafts the year he breaks out. So, you know, but that is the sacrifice I have to make in order to, you know, have integrity, I think, within the industry for myself. So, again, not a decision that everybody in the industry makes, but I think a large portion of the industry does do that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair. I mean, Kevin and I have been kind of, I don't know if it's a struggling, Kevin, with the same kind of idea since the pod was formed, since we started, you know, creating content for Pitcher List a couple of years ago as well. Kevin, would you say that you've lost out on fab bids in the last 2 years on a regular basis after making recommendations on the pod?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Especially in our listener leagues. Like, so, I mean, how do they know who I like? Yes. Yeah, absolutely. It happens. But I agree 100% with what Justin just said. It's great. That's why we're doing this. If it wasn't our goal to be transparent and, you know, I think it actually thinking of it backwards as well. If we're not attempting to follow our own advice, then we shouldn't be given that advice. So if we're not going to try to follow it, then we shouldn't be saying it in the first place. And then once we do say it, of course, it's going to be out there and people are going to have an idea. But that's what it just makes it more fun to me.
Now, of course, not every piece of advice we give throughout our tenure has been good advice. Well, at least in retrospect, maybe we had good process, or maybe we've thought it was going to be good advice. And we followed it, like you said, Kevin, and it kind of blew up in our face. Can you think back, at least during the tenure of this show, of like the one piece of advice that's truly blown up in your face to be, in retrospect, probably the worst advice that we, you or I, or as a show, we have given?
Well, my first thought goes to start pitcher streaming. And, you know, usually things are okay even when they're not what you would hope. But I remember one time, I believe in 2021, recommending John Lester in a two-start week, and he just got blow up in both starts. And that was absolutely horrible. But going back a little further, I told a buddy of mine 4 years ago that trading Vladimir Guerrero Jr. for Anthony Rizzo and Billy Hamilton was a good idea in a keeper league, and that did not turn out well at all.
There's still time. Maybe? Yeah. No. Yeah, probably not. It's one of those things where you gotta, if you do it and you take your own advice as well and it blows up, you almost feel better about that, because at least it hurt you as much as it hurt everybody else that might have followed that. And hopefully we're providing more good than bad when it comes to that kind of advice. Justin, you've been doing this for a long time. Do you have any piece of advice that comes to mind over the years that still haunts you to this day?
I mean, the longer you do this kind of work, the more times you're going to be wrong and offer pieces of advice that you're going to blow up in your face and people will never let you forget. I'll just give an example from this last year that turned out to just be so abhorrently wrong. I was fading Aaron Judge, and for really good reason. Like, there was talk that because he wasn't vaccinated, he wouldn't even be able to play in home games, the long injury history. And so, like, you know, going into like my main event draft in Las Vegas last year, he was pretty much off of my board. And I told people on podcasts, in articles, you should not even have him on your board because there is a chance that he misses at least half the season. And clearly that was wrong. I feel like, you know, at the end of the day, as long as you are, you know, backing up what you say and there's good rationale, you're going to make mistakes and you're going to just be flat out wrong sometimes. And that's okay, as long as you don't pretend like you're never wrong. I think the worst thing a person can do in the industry is be like, and is not own up to their mistakes in logic or in analysis or just, you know, in luck sometimes.
Yeah. And as Nick is reminding us, and it was going to come up at some point during the show, Nick, but we are in the business of good discussion, not being right. It's about the process behind the decisions that we make or the advice that we give. So I will echo what Nick says on a regular basis as well. So I will call out, there's one piece of advice, Justin, that I got from you and Paul and Sleeper in the Bus years ago that I utilized in my Dynasty League. And that was when Matt Carpenter pretty much looked like he was absolutely done. And you guys were very vocal about getting rid of him, and I got rid of him just like that as well. And he came back for a competing team in my head-to-head league, and I never lived that out. But the fact is, you guys never let yourself live it down either. And so that's what I appreciated about that fact.
Is in that my defense, you owned up to it. In my defense, as much as I, over the years, I think it's the first time I've ever said this on a podcast, the whole Matt Carpenter thing was actually Jason and Paul. And I was just there and I have taken ownership of this Jason and Paul's mistake and rightfully so, because I didn't disagree with them because I thought they were right. But I want to say that I never actually said drop Matt Carpenter.
I remember the whole Matt Carpenter thing, and I know exactly the time period you're talking, Adam, because at the time I was splitting some DFS lineups with a friend, and His first draft one morning was and had Matt Carpenter in it. I said, no, he's toast. We're not using Matt Carpenter. And that was like the day he started the breakout. And it cost us a lot of money by me kicking Matt Carpenter out of the lineup.
It's always different when there's money involved, I guess. Yeah.
It seems to be sometimes that with the advice giving that you guys do, it's a bit like The Price is Right and playing Plinko. You can put one of those discs in the same slot every time, but you're going to get different results because there are so many different factors that it's going to hit on the way down. And the same goes with the advice that you guys give. There are, you know, things you can't expect or anticipate that are going to impact how that advice ends up in the long run?
I can't believe I haven't seen it yet. I couldn't believe that it doesn't exist. But there has to have been some kind of study on Plinko as to how many times when you put that little coin in a certain spot, it lands in. In our line of work, there's got to be somebody out there that has done this very important research. And please make sure you DM me the link to that information, because I'd be very curious to see it.
I'm not a busy mom. I've got time. I'll go down that rabbit hole for you.
Love it. Love it. That's a PitchCon 2024 presentation in the works.
Oh, God, no.
All right. Well, Danielle, are you still playing fantasy baseball, right? You haven't stopped playing. Maybe you don't play in 15 leagues or so. Maybe you do. I don't know. I know there's a limit that Justin has now on how many leagues. But are you going to continue to play TGFBI in any other leagues for your own sake? Or is it continuously just a troll job to try to beat Justin?
I'm not sure anymore of what my reasoning is.
and that's a good sign.
So I am still playing. I played in TGFBI last year. I was able to improve my play, how well I did, my standing overall. I was even able to improve my standing just in my own league. So in a way, I accomplished my goal. I beat Justin last year. Because he finished much, much, much lower than I did. But I also was invited into a few other leagues. I had to be cautious about what I took on just because I wasn't sure what my capacity was to do more leagues. Mm-hmm. So I chose an eliminator league where I didn't have to do anything. We did the draft and then I would get new players every so often, depending on who got booted out every couple of weeks. And then I also played DFS last year towards the end of the season. So I think it was maybe the last 8 weeks of the season or something like that. I played in a competition that was actually against a lot, Paul, Justin, Matt Truss, who I know was with Justin in Tout. They were in that Tout DFS, and he did very well. I won 2 weeks in a row. So
I think I saw some tweets on that.
Yeah.
One or two. So
I was very proud of myself. I did very well. Part of it is just that I really enjoy the community. I enjoy the camaraderie. I don't know that I can say I'm at a point yet where I really love fantasy baseball itself. I still feel very unsure of what I'm doing. And so I'm kind of a, anxious person anyways. And the overthinking that I do with fantasy baseball is maybe not the best. But I want to keep trying and see if I can continue to improve. I don't know how long I'll last. I have not signed up for TGFBI yet this year, but we'll see.
So do you get Justin, does she get grandfathered in, or Danielle, have you created new fantasy content, as it was very clearly stated in the rules for entering back when you entered the first season? Are you grandfathered in, or have you continued to create any content?
No, I've made an exception for myself because I am co-owner of TGFBI, and so I get to play too. the fantasy content that I do is watching the kids while he gets to go out and do lots of. For those of you who don't know, Justin is doing 30 podcasts in 30 days, doing previews of all of the teams. That's a lot of extra work for me.
I take it, Justin, you are recording those on individual days as well. You haven't didn't do like 15 in one day and then 15 in another day, and you're just programming them out. You're actually recording them throughout the course of the month.
Yeah, sometimes I'm recording more in one day than like I'm not actually spending each day out in the office recording those. Like for instance, yesterday I did 6 podcasts, if you include my PitchCon panel.
Sure.
And so I was on the air for about 8 hours of that day. So I mean, that is one of those pieces of advice like that someone else gave me that has negatively impacted my life is you got to work really, really hard if you want to make it in this industry. And that means a lot of hours of me doing things like recording podcasts.
Yeah. And then on top of that, of course, you've got Potapalooza coming up as well. So you'll be doing plenty of recording.
This is like my my prep work.
Spring training. Yeah, this is spring training for that. I like it. All right. Well, we're a Fab-centric show, at least in season. So I got to ask you guys some questions regarding Fab, whether it's Fab strategy, Fab, you know, just how you kind of look at Fab. So this is going to give you each one like a part of this question. But in general, I want to know from you guys, like, how do you guys like doing Fab? Are you targeting certain positions? Are you targeting certain stats? And how does that maybe affect how you draft, especially later on in the draft, knowing that you can go after, you feel good about going after certain things during the season on the wire, or at least you've had success. So Danielle, first and foremost, in the last 2 years, since this is your first 2 years of doing it, what has gone right, like doing Fab? Fab is one of the more, I guess, intricate parts of learning. You have to learn because you have to do it every week, especially in a weekly league. And we're not even talking about daily moves or fastest finger types of leagues. We're talking strictly, we'll just stay with TGFBI style, NFBC style weekly leagues. You're placing your bids, no $0 bids. So you got to spend all, $1,000 of your budget. What went right for you and kind of what went wrong for you, at least in the last 2 years of your first instance of doing Fab?
I want to start off with saying I don't like Fab. I don't like it at all. If I could, I'd come up with a Dr. Seuss rhyme for how much I don't like it. I don't like it so much that I had two football leagues this year that had Fab, and I was like, nope, not touching those. Nope. Not even gonna, I did nothing with it. I am still a student with Fab. I don't really know what I'm doing because the leagues that I have played in, there's no telling really when the other league mates were going to go all in on somebody and when they were going to be a little bit more casual about it. So it was always a guessing game for me whether I needed to go big on my bid or if I could go ahead and, throw in 5, 10, 20 on a player. That was very difficult for me to try and navigate. My first year, I was very hesitant and unsure of when was a good time to drop a player. I tried to use some of the advice that people gave me, but even with that, I just was playing scared. Whereas this last year, I went ahead and went all in. There were players that, and I can't even remember who, because he was just so bad and I just didn't like him on my team. But within the first month, I was like, this is ridiculous. He's not doing anything. I know he was high on my draft board, but I'm cutting him. I'm not going to deal with this for the rest of the season. And so I did. I went ahead and cut him. So I played a lot more like that with Fab and went ahead and picked up guys that I thought would be more productive for me. I did a better job, I think, of taking a look at what I needed and going for small pieces for a short period of time rather than trying to pick up someone exciting that would last me for the rest of the season. Some misses.
Yeah, of course. Justin, I mentioned when you're using Fab, are you looking at guys that, if you're doing Fab, are you looking for specific stats? Are there certain stats or certain types of players that kind of you kind of hang your hat on knowing that you can identify them a little bit quicker and you can get them a little bit sooner than the rest of your leagues? And thus, maybe you are fading them a little bit more in your drafts, knowing that your talent level for finding these types of players during the season can focus on something else during the draft. How is your Fab strategy?
Yeah, I don't know that I have like a particular type of player. I mean, there's obviously for me, it's a matter of like depth of league and like how categorical kind of issues. Like, I like to leave my league or my drafts with saves and stolen bases because I know how much more difficult they can be in season to find. But for the most part, like I feel like because I do so much content, because I do so much work, like I don't necessarily have a type of player that I'm not very good at, you know, kind of identifying in season via fab. So I don't feel like I have a huge weak point there. I think my bigger weak point has been more of being too aggressive early and then finding out I don't have fab by the end of the season.
Yeah, definitely more difficult to kind of gauge what the rest of the room is going to do each and every week in the first like 2 months of the season when everybody has $1,000 to start. It gets a little bit easier, obviously, when you realize, oh, I'm the only one with money, or oh, I'm the only one without money come the second half of the season. So I get that. Kevin, I think we've talked about this a couple times. I really wanted you to reiterate this, kind of like your game plan, especially for your reserve picks, for your bench spots for the last 5 to 7 rounds of a draft. When it comes, are these picks that you are looking at being contributors to your team long term, or are most of them basically week 0.5 fab runs, basically the fab run you do without spending any fab money with your expectation that you're not going to be holding on to these guys past maybe week 2 or 3?
I think it changes as draft season progresses. Early in draft season, it's my lottery tickets, guys that I think have big upside, but it's not very likely that we're going to see it, because if we don't, then they're my first drops of the year. As we get closer to the season, then I'm looking more at the schedule, first couple weeks of the season, maybe 3 weeks. One good example is Martin Perez. In my most recent On the Wire listener league, I was looking at the Rangers schedule early in the season when I made that pick. I'm almost certain he's not going to repeat what he did last season, but early in the year, it looks like after he gets probably the Orioles, who are going to be better than we think. So that's why I'm saying after that game, even may not even use him at home in Texas against the Orioles, as crazy as that would have sounded a couple of years ago. But then they face the Royals twice, and the Athletics and the Reds. So it's a schedule thing as well, and it will continue to be more and more along those lines as we get closer to the season.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that consistently hear this from analysts, from fantasy analysts, especially baseball, that you just don't draft fab leagues in October and November, December. And of course, our first listener league, all of our listener leagues are fab leagues. They're 12 teamers with fab on the NFBC platform. And of course, our first one drafted November 15th. And I personally found to kind of echo a lot of what you just said, Kevin, like I had a lot more fun playing, drafting a fab league in November and December than I did drafting my DC, because I could throw out those darts and feel good about it. Like feel actually like confident about it, because I know that come week one, like I have no problem dropping probably my final, you know, 7 to 8 picks of that draft, knowing that a lot of things will change throughout the offseason and into spring training going into the opening day. So I had a lot of fun drafting those leagues, and we'll be doing an episode later on in March, probably kind of comparing where teams went with those final 5 picks in the early November, in the November drafts versus one of our March drafts coming up, just to see the strategy change. As you mentioned, a lot of things, you're looking at a lot of things differently come the last 5 rounds in March, when a lot more things are known, and a lot more question marks are answered. Danielle, I want to end this little segment with you guys by giving you an opportunity to provide your own advice. You were given a lot of advice when you first started TGFBI 2 years ago, and a lot of it either you didn't know how to use or probably are still trying to figure out how to use. But if there is any additional piece of advice that you could impart into listeners that may be thinking about jumping in on their own, somebody who is not in the industry who is thinking about jumping in Or is planning on jumping in one of the TGFBI satellite leagues that Justin, you put on as well. Something I also completely recommend anybody do. I was lucky enough before I got into pitcher list, I was able to play in one of those satellite leagues myself. But is there anything that you could impart today that almost you wish you were, that you learned over the last 2 years that you either wish somebody taught you or something that's really, you've really kind of honed in on throughout the last 2 years?
Yeah, absolutely. Do not start playing fantasy baseball by jumping into a huge, very, very public expert league with lots of people who know a lot more about what they're doing than you do. And it's also a roto league, which apparently is very difficult to jump in on. So basically, that's the short version. You know, I've gotten the opportunity to talk to a lot of other fantasy baseball players in person in Las Vegas and also in Arizona. And it was great because I got to learn about other leagues that are out there, other styles of play. Whether it's the, you know, the DFS was actually really fun for me because I could do it one day. And it was short and quick and easy. And then that was it. So I really enjoyed that. The Eliminator League was a lot of fun. So that I didn't have to spend so much time in it. My recommendation would be, number one, find some friends who are interested in doing it as well. And then go around and take a look at the different sites that host free leagues and find the one that has the setup, the rules maybe that you're most comfortable with, and start off there just to dip your toe in. Because ultimately, it's about having fun and enjoying some time with your friends. And I think that that's a great way to do it. And if you can build from there and go on to something more, even better.
I love that advice. I mean, I know that there are plenty of free public leagues out there. You do have to be careful with some of them, especially halfway through the season. If you play in enough of those public leagues, you know half that league will completely ignore what's going on if they feel like they're out of it by the All-Star break. And so knowing what your competition level is going in and by the end of the season. So if you win your league, you're feeling good about yourself, but at the same time, you also have to know who you're going up against so you can take those steps in the next season for sure. I'm gonna echo something you kind of touched on, but when you're looking to get advice, knowing the format in which you are playing in, not only knowing the rules of your league and the format you're playing in, but if you're listening to podcasts, if you're listening to us, if you're listening to anybody else, if you're reading content, you really need to know where their target is, who their information, their advice that they're giving is targeted toward. And then you should be able to change and adapt that information and that advice into how it might impact your league and your format. In our show, we focus a lot on NFBC fab periods, and the player pools that are available there. And we talk about 12 teamers versus 15 teamers, but they're between head-to-head leagues, between fastest fingers, dynasty, keeper leagues, points leagues, Atnu. There's only so many different formats that you kind of touched on there, Danielle, that it's really important that you kind of, when you're choosing the advice to take, you're choosing wisely in that you're finding ways that you can take good advice and adapt it into the leagues that you're playing in.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that was all really great. I really appreciate you guys taking the time. I know you both had your own presentations during PitchCon yesterday. So I believe that day three stream of PitchCon is live on Twitch. So if anybody wants to go back and you didn't get a chance to watch Danielle or Justin's work there, make sure you do that because it was amazing. And I appreciate all the work and effort that you both put in there. And if you're not following either one of these guys on Twitter, make sure you're doing that as well. Danielle, you put out a screenshot, I think, of that, the curse sheet on Twitter. That was a great read.
Nick did an amazing job with that 1898 memo from Major League Baseball about which curse words would not be able to be said at the ball field.
Yeah.
amongst others. I guess they really wanted to put out the big ones that you couldn't say.
Yeah, but those panels them specifically will be available on the Pitcherless YouTube channel in the coming days, weeks. But you can watch the entire day stream of days 1, 2, and 3 on the Twitch channel as well. Justin, besides Podapalooza and your 30 pods in 30 days, anything else that you're working on besides everything?
Yeah, I mean, I write daily at FanGraphs. I may have a couple new things coming up pretty soon, but I'm not quite ready to announce them yet. And I'm on Sleeper in the Bus, TTFBI podcast, and the Friends Fantasy Benefits podcast. That's about it. Not much.
No. Less than in the past.
Yes. I've turned it back a little bit.
All right. Well, guys, thank you so much for being part of our 100th episode. I hope to see you guys again soon. Maybe separately. Maybe you're a package deal in the future as well. I'm not sure. We'll see.
Thank you, guys. Thank you all so much.
All right, guys, we're going to take a quick break. And just the fact I want to remind everybody out there watching that, of course, this is PitchCon 2023, all with 100% of the proceeds going toward the ALS Association. Make sure you are giving generously and often as much as you can. I'm pretty sure Nick tracks who generates the most donations during their panel. So make us look good. Throw out as much as you can in there. I know Kevin and I have already donated. I'll probably donate a little bit more before the end of the day. Make sure that you're getting in on those prizes. There's a whole bunch of great prizes, including, forgot to mention it while they were here, but the Justin Mason bathing suit, which if you search enough, you'll find Justin modeling it somewhere on the internet. And make sure that you're getting in on what are all of the great prizes that you're looking at. Is there something that piqued your interest the most, Kevin?
I didn't really look at the list that closely, but I did see that, as always, I think everybody is so generous and it's amazing. And the fact that the only way you can get a lifetime PL Pro membership is through this and winning this, the raffle at the end of the day, that's amazing.
Well, what's really cool about that is if we're going to stick with it as in the past, of course, you'll get into Discord, into the PL Discord, and you get your own color. Your right. name shows up in a different color than everybody else, except for probably the other two or three who have won the equivalent prize in the past. But it's a very elite club to be in on that. So make sure you're getting on that. So we got, I can't believe we still got 20 minutes. So we should probably keep going with this so that Nick doesn't have a bunch of dead air. Hopefully we can get another guest in here. We're going to, you know what? I had that Rolodex. I'm going to roll it around. I'm going to go all the way back to our very first guest. This is episode 2 of On the Wire. I'm going to rejoin us today again to celebrate our 100th episode. Please welcome Yancey Eaton back to the show.
What's up, guys?
What's up, Yancey?
Really good to see you guys. Thank you so much for having me on. I think this is the second or the third time, third or fourth. I've been on the show before is the point.
Yeah,
it's kind of a big deal. It is a big deal. Yeah. It's its own special torture whenever everybody's like talking about you and you're like not in the podcast. So it is good to jump on and congrats on 100, guys. I've made the same joke multiple times, but to get to 100 for a fantasy baseball podcast, which is incredibly niche and there is not a gigantic audience, even some of the biggest podcasts that you guys can think of, they do not have massive listenerships and it's not the most lucrative of things to do with your time. So to get to 100 episodes, you guys have to truly enjoy doing it. And it's obvious that you guys do. So congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Yancey.
If we could keep the whole not lucrative part down to a minimum while my wife is in earshot, that would be really appreciated.
Yeah. She thinks you're absolutely printing money, right?
Exactly. Yeah. No idea. All right.
The best part about this is when I'm watching a game and my wife asks me to do something, I say, when I'm done working.
Yeah.
As I'm watching a baseball game.
Yeah. I do like the comment that we have from Shrubzy. For those who are listening just on audio, my background is a gigantic picture of Pitchless founder and podcaster Nick Pollock.
It is a picture. It's not actually Nick, like right looking over your shoulder.
Yeah, just a beautiful smile, beautiful head of hair, beautiful teeth. Look at him. Just a complete package. But it was the first thing whenever I Googled Nick Pollock. So there we go.
That's what popped up. It wasn't his Brandeis picture, his pitcher, because I'm pretty sure that can be found pretty easily as well.
Yeah, that could have been found. I have some really good pictures of him when he was younger, like playing guitar and stuff that I could have used. I mean, I really could have hurt him if I chose to, but
that's not why we're here.
Yeah, we kept it pretty tame.
Well, Yanti, you have been not in the industry for a long time. And what I mean by that is that you've been communicating, you've been conversing, you've been part of the fantasy baseball industry in such that you listen to a ton of podcasts, you take in a lot of content, you listen to a lot of advice, if you will. How much of that advice you use, I don't know, that's on you, that's fine. Because you consume so much, I love to ask you basically, how important do you think advice is to be presented? What I mean by that is, what's more important? If the advice is being presented really well or the source material itself? Justin touched on, he's an analyst first. He's a player second, if you will. He's in the business of giving, you know, good advice that he would follow. But in your mind, do you follow or do you take the advice more so of somebody who seems to be more of an analyst or somebody that's more of a seasoned player?
I absolutely hate cliche answers. So I'm going to try really hard during this 15 minutes that we're talking to avoid cliches. It really is kind of a combination of both. Like our standard bearer within the industry, and he gets a lot of love and deservedly so. He's a good friend of mine. But Vlad Sedler is kind of both of those things. He is a high stakes crusher in multiple sports. He plays DFS. You know, he's basically taken FTN from like an unknown entity to, you know, a premier destination for fantasy baseball content. His column that he writes weekly is, you know, hundreds of players use it and they use that against him in high stakes leagues where he is still winning and performing. He's just all around an excellent player and he's an even better analyst. And I think that's extremely rare and hard to do. So if anybody, you know, wants to model somebody, it's Vlad, right? But I don't think that precludes people who maybe aren't necessarily the best players or perhaps they just haven't played in as many leagues. They don't have as large of a sample of showing that success, but there may be data there that is something that they're presenting or something that they've uncovered that is interesting. I think there's so much value in just trying to be very meticulous on how you weight the types of information sources that are coming to you. I do listen to everything. I do read everything. And I've gotten pretty good at quickly identifying how much effort and work was going behind this, right? If it's just a tweet that is just basically a screenshot of their StatCast page, I'm just going to assume that this person probably didn't put a whole lot of thought into it, but I still want to take that in because I like getting a pulse of what the industry is thinking or what just regular players are thinking. I do think there is value in knowing that 84 analysts have all identified Lars Nootbaar as a breakout this year, right? I've already seen it a bunch. It's going to happen a bunch. Everybody's talking about Justin Steele. Everybody's talking about Christian Javier making the leap to being an SP1 and, you know, being taken in the second round next year. I think that all of those things have value. That's a really long way of saying I just don't take one tweet that anybody says at face value. I kind of build a rapport with people and I want to see how often are they consistently right. I'm back testing those things. I don't necessarily care if Alex Chamberlain isn't the best NFBC high stakes grinder because he's doing some of the most beneficial work that everybody builds their projections and kind of their player analyses off of. And it's just two completely different skill sets. So you really have to just spend a lot of time with who it is that you're trusting. Another one of my pet peeves, and I'm talking super long, I'll come up for air in a second, and let Kevin talk. Another one of my pet peeves is whenever, you know, people keep saying, and a lot of analysts say this, they're like, I don't read or listen to anybody else because I don't want to be biased by them. I think that is the complete opposite of a Bayesian approach, which is you're not supposed to shield yourself from external information. You're supposed to hone your craft and make yourself better at ascertaining what is useful and what isn't. The answer isn't to like lock yourself up in your house and not read anything. It's to get better at back testing and seeing what sources are good because they will improve your game. So overall, that's kind of where I'm at with this. I want to see a track record with people as far as like how often are they right? Not everybody's going to be right all the time, but you know, how often are they right? If they are consistently crushing in these high stakes games, there's also a direct correlation to how often people are tweeting versus how good of a player they are. I think some of like the most winningest players in NFBC rarely tweet. And, you know, I think there's something to be said to that, too. So whenever they do say something, it carries a little bit more weight. This is the longest answer I've ever given, but it really just depends. It really just depends. And I say spend a lot of time and really think about and be meticulous and mindful, to pull that word from the first half of the segment. Be mindful of who it is that you're listening to.
Kevin, I want you to respond to a piece that I got from Yancey's long-winded answer to a very short question. Yeah. He talked about how he listened to a lot of people, and like, there's something to be said about everybody's in on Lars Nootbaar. Everybody's talking about Justin Steele. Yes, Nick, people like Justin Steele. How difficult, I guess, is it to not just latch on to good advice that you hear from somebody about Lars Nootbaar, even though like maybe you don't have time to look into that, into Lars Nootbaar, to make sure that you agree with it, but you trust the person that you're listening to, that you want to turn around and it's not Lars Nootbaar in season, he's going to be drafted, but like if you hear somebody else say, hey, you should be looking at this guy for your fab, how difficult is it for you to be like, you know what, that's probably good advice, I trust this person, I'm going to go ahead and regurgitate that on our show, without doing the due diligence of that? Because you know what, it seems like that would be a really easy thing to be able to cherry pick and do throughout the course of the season.
I don't think I would ever just say something on the show because I heard it somewhere else. I think there's the aspect of getting advice isn't just because we think they know more than we do. A lot of it is, it's a time saver, right? So even if we're not going to start from scratch and end up in the same spot as something we're hearing, hearing it first lets us skip a whole lot of steps and then go do a little less work, but still look further into what's going on there. Right. So I think that's part of it. It's really interesting. I love what Yancey said about, you know, track record. I think that plays a big part there. There can be a track record of things that we hear, and it doesn't necessarily have to be considered advice at the time, just little things that we pick up from listening to people over time that gives us value when we're doing our own research. And like I said, letting us skip some steps and go straight to, oh, let's just go see why they like Lars Nootbaar, not starting from scratch and waiting for Lars Nootbaar to come to the top of our searches.
I mean, I think that you kind of touched on this too, and it leads to this question about like, you guys talk about having a track record. I would be very surprised if there's anybody out there literally tracking all of the advice everybody's given and kind of comparing it over time and making a nice tableau, a spreadsheet and whatever, that you can kind of look that up. But my guess is that it's how that information has been presented, how it sticks in your head. I talked about, I still remember, you know, the Matt Carpenter thing from Justin and Sleeper in the Bus and all that, because it's just the way it was presented, how it impacted my decision making at that time, and that has stuck with me. A lot more other positive things have stuck with me with those guys, don't get me wrong. But Yancey, like, how does the presentation of the information that people are presenting in the content that you're consuming impact how much you're going to latch onto them? I mean, don't get me wrong, like, Nick is extremely excited, rightfully so, about PLV. We saw it in the intro of PitchCon, that 2-hour presentation, and how much he's been teasing it over all of the podcasts throughout the last couple of weeks. And that's to say, there's a lot of effort and time and energy that he's put into that and how proud he is of it. Does that play into how you consume or trust the advice that you're listening to? Or, you know, is the presentation not that important?
I I'm not sure if I like the word presentation, but I do think that effort matters quite a bit, right? It's very, very cheap and easy to start a podcast or to tweet out some takes about a player. And I'm always trying to identify how much time and effort went into this, how much research was back behind it. There are a lot of podcasts, and, you know, unfortunately, a lot of them kind of, it sounds like it's a, you know, people reading off of a Statcast page or Fangraphs or, you know, what have you. There's not a whole lot of context. It's not league specific. It's just kind of them talking about a player and that they like them, and they use like very kind of ambiguous terms as far as like, yeah, I like him as a breakout, or I think he's a value, but they don't really entail what that means. And, you know, sometimes saying like somebody is a value, that means that you think they're going to hit 3 more home runs in their projection, and maybe they're a value at that ADP, but the second they rise 10 or 15 spots, they're no longer a value. And I think that kind of context matters. So overall, whenever I see people being like extremely methodical and calculated with how they use their words, that's what I'm looking at as far as presentation goes. How long did it take them to create something like this? I have no interest in like hot takes or bold predictions, those types of things. It used to be catnip. I used to absolutely love stuff like that, but now I'm a lot more calculated with what it is that I actually gravitate towards.
Yeah. I mean, Kevin, same thing. I mean, I think we're pretty specific in season when we're giving reasons why we are giving advice to pick up certain players in certain situations. And that changes throughout the course of the season because, you know, you're looking for different things in August than you are in April, if you will. But when you are trying to back up the reason for the players that you're suggesting, how easy is it for you to just latch on to stats that you've been using for years versus new stats that come up that may or may not be beneficial?
Yeah, I think along those lines, but the bigger issue for me is the words that come out of my mouth aren't always exactly what is in my head. And it's Same. Because of tendencies that we've had over time, right? Especially writing a weekly Fab article or us talking about Fab each week when we're playing 5x5 rotisserie fantasy baseball. In most cases, that's what we're talking about. And because categories are batting average and ERA, we use those terms quite often when writing or speaking, when that's, you know, he's got a 2.5 ERA over his last 8 starts. That's going to come up because that's the result we're looking for, even though we know in our head that past ERA doesn't have much of a correlation on future ERA, right? So I have a big problem not using those terms because it's the end result that we're hoping for and talking about when it comes to those categories. Even though just because he had that great ERA over the last few starts isn't indicative of what's going to happen. And we know that, but it's difficult. Like, yeah, he's done this. That's not necessarily why we like him going forward, but we think he can continue. And that's what I'm trying to improve on is not using some of the words and language that we know isn't really the reason we like the guy. What is the real reason? And I'm trying to concentrate on that more.
Yeah, that's fair. It's the concentration part that especially in you're doing your pod, and like all the editing that I want to do at the end is minimal. So it's like I want to do as much concentration during the show as I can so that we are not spending, you know, 2 hours editing the show after the fact. You take in a lot of advice, Yancey. You have for years. I want you to, and I gave you this question in advance, so you've had time to think about it. I want you to give me what is the single best and single worst piece of advice you've ever been given that you have actually acted on. You do not have to name names. I'd rather you didn't. You can tell us off air later on who they were. But in general, what was that advice and how did it kind of impact you in your game?
Yeah, sure. So you didn't actually put in the show notes, the show outline, if this was fantasy or non-fantasy related. So I'll give you one of non-fantasy and fantasy very quickly. Loophole. The worst advice I ever got was actually from my dad. And this isn't anything mean to say about my dad, but Before I got married, he basically told me that when it comes to life in general and dealing with other people, hell is other people, and you can be happy or you can be right. He basically said it was like as clear cut as that, right? And obviously my dad, he's probably coming from some experience that was difficult for him and an upbringing that he was probably still grappling with and is still grappling with to this day. But I don't believe that you have to choose to be happy or to be right. I think you have to choose to actively engage with people at an emotional level and actually work to communicate. And that has served me very well. Yeah, just the idea that now that you get married, your life is over and you can't be happy and right at the same time. I don't think that exists. Just wanted to get that in there. Doesn't help anybody. Will not help you win your teams. From a fantasy standpoint, the some of the best advice, Toby Batflip Crazy actually says this all the time, which is there are many, many ways to win. When I first started playing, I was very... I would just latch onto whatever the last podcast was that I had said. And I remember when I first started listening, I was listening to the CBS Fantasy Baseball podcast, and Nando DeFino said something about like Adam Eaton being a sleeper. And without me really having any type of context, I just assumed that that meant that I need to draft Adam Eaton in every single league. And I did, right? Or, you know, hearing somebody say something about like Unieski Betancourt having like a hot 2 weeks. So I'm dropping players that I picked up in the fourth or fifth round. That whole idea of being given advice without the context around it, I'm so big on, tell me exactly what the league size is. Tell me what types of players you're dropping these people for. I actually love that Danielle, you know, basically said like some of the advice that Yancey gave me, or actually all of it, wasn't particularly helpful, right? Because I was coming from a place where, you know, after having played for years, I was able to kind of, you know, trial and do A and B testing of what worked and what didn't for me, but she still did not have that actual base set of skills and understanding of the game. And I kind of just threw everything at her. So the same thing that like I get upset with, you know, fantasy podcasters and people on Twitter and analysts and stuff, whenever they just throw stuff out without context, like, hey, look at this, you know, hashtag wow. And it's just a screenshot of a StatCast page with no context whatsoever.
Or pitcherless player page. Yeah.
Or pitcherless player page with absolutely no notes or anything like that. Right. You know, that's what I was doing with her. So I always want that extra level. Like, don't just say like, oh, this guy is a pickup. You guys actually do this pretty well. You guys are talking about specifically what type of leagues, what type of format. You know, maybe this player doesn't really play up in a points league. These are the types of players I'm looking for in this range that I, you know, maybe you can perhaps wait for these two or three players after those. That context is so, so important. And I think that's kind of what newer players need to look out for is this analyst actually giving me like a really practical piece of advice that's actionable and it makes sense for my league. As far as like, so the whole like one size fits all thing, don't buy into that. I love that Toby says this. There's many ways to win. I've seen people take three or four starting pitchers to start a league and they completely dusted me. I've seen people double pump elite catchers and win. I've seen people not take any saves in the draft and they struck it super late and, you know, won an overall, right? There's many ways. And I think if you just focus on every single fantasy league is a puzzle as opposed to just, and we're already up against time, man, time goes so fast. You just think of it as a puzzle and there's many ways to win. And there's not one person who's a shaman that has all the right answers. I think that's it. Nick says, keep going. We got the green light. Cool.
All right. good for you, Nick. Thank you. It is our 100th episode. And like I said, we can very easily, we didn't even do a news and notes section. And if we did a news and notes section, there's always plenty of,
we'd just be getting started.
Yeah. Well, I think that is, that pretty much sums up a lot of what we wanted to talk about. I do want to end the show like we typically do, Kevin, and give you an opportunity to give your final thoughts, Kevin's final thoughts of the show. Any additional piece of advice, either having to do with what we talked about, or anything else that you want to impart onto our listeners after finishing off episode 100.
Yeah, I got a couple of things. First, one of the best pieces of advice I was ever given, and it came from several people, but one in particular, it was actually Eno Saris. You need to go to First Pitch Arizona. That's what he looked at me and I said, you need to go to First Pitch Arizona. And that's not a dig at either of you, who I would love to see there next year when we're there, but it was great advice. It was absolutely amazing. And then I think after all the analysis we do and everything we put into it, the hours and hours of time each week that we put into our fantasy baseball teams, whether you want to call it the fantasy baseball gods, whether you want to call it fantasy karma, all of the scientists in this community, which there are many and they're amazing, would say that it's variance, right? All of that. You don't want to mess up your fantasy karma for the upcoming season. And the whole point of this PitchCon is we're raising money for ALS research. Great fantasy karma there. You don't want to be sitting there in September with a league on the line and your starting pitcher, when you need a win, gets pulled with 4 2/3 and say, ah, if I'd have just hit send on that donation during PitchCon. So yeah, fantasy karma. Let's keep it going today and get to that $10,000 goal.
There we go. That's why we're here, right? That is great advice for everybody. I'm going to switch it up a little bit more. Nancy, I'm going to let you have the last word here, only because I'm curious. We've done 100 episodes. Mm-hmm. We are on our way to doing another 100 more over the next 2 years. Is there any? You gave us some great advice early on. You were our first guest, and actually, you haven't been on the show since. Well, you've been on a lot of other shows, but this is the first time you've been back on.
Hard to keep track.
That's how memorable we are, that you just import us into your memories when they didn't exist. Is there a small piece of advice that you can provide to us as we impart into the next 100?
I will just say very quickly, because I know we have to wrap up. I've actually been asked to be the first guest on several podcasts, I think it's because the stakes feel so low with me. I'm humbled and I really appreciate that. Knowing that you guys made it to 100, you guys are doing like the things that are really hard that make podcasts go away, which is you guys do care about it. If you really want to grow your audience, you guys really need to start attacking people's character and going after people and naming names. So you could consider that. That's one way to grow the show.
It's advice.
I would just say double down on what you guys do well, which is you guys really give good context surrounding a player and exactly how valuable they are. So the more specific you can get, I hate whenever people say like, oh, you have to make a podcast for everybody. No, you don't. You need to make something that's super niche, and you need to have 100 super fans, and those people will support you forever. So you guys just double down on being as niche and as extremely esoteric as you can in your analysis, and I think good things will follow. So thanks for having me. I am getting my podcast confused. I thought I was on here twice, but whatever.
There are quite a few podcasts on the Pitcher List Podcast Network, and you've been on several of them, rightfully so. So but that, you know what? After all that, that is going to do it for the 100th episode of On the Wire. Of course, I am Adam Howe. Follow me at 80 Grade. This is joined, as always, by Kevin Hastings at Hastings Kevin. And with after all that, thanks for listening. We bid you goodbye.